final case today will be Ali against Ashcroft. Mr. Kamali.
May it please the court, your honors. My name is Tahir Kamali. I'm a pro bono attorney for Mr. Mirwais Ali, who is in the United States government custody for the past 3 years. There are four issues in this case. They are well briefed by both the plaintiff, by the petitioner, and the respondent. As far as the first two issues concerned about Mr. Ali's citizenship and withholding of removal, I rely heavily on my brief. The other two issues, which are whether the Board of Immigration Appeals...
Are there so far any appellate courts that have held that the Parental Citizenship Act applies retroactively?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
As far as the remaining two issues, whether the Board of Immigration Appeals erred in affirming the immigration judge's conclusion that Ali was ineligible for relief under Article 3 of the Convention Against Torture, and whether the Board of Immigration Appeals, by relying on decision of June 12th of 2003 in the matter of Pickering, erred in denying Ali's motion to reopen the proceedings, I will talk about this morning.
I have a question on that issue.
Yes, Your Honor.
As you pointed out in your brief, Mr. Ali's conviction was modified rather than vacated, but the conviction was modified solely in order to avoid the adverse consequences of that conviction on Mr. Ali's immigration status. Why then doesn't the rationale of Pickering apply here?
Judge, before looking at matter of Pickering, which came out on June 12th of 2003, we were in front of the immigration judge in 2002. To be exact, I believe it was April or May of 2002. The immigration judge went ahead and, after issuing the order removing Mr. Ali, said that explicitly in a written opinion that the relief may be somewhere else, not in immigration court.
But it was decided, Pickering was decided before the board disposed of the motion to reopen. And of course, the usual rule is that new rules and precedents apply to pending cases.
True. But at the same time, Your Honor, Pickering did not talk about modifying. In reality, Pickering talked about two main cases from the Board of Immigration Appeals, being matter of Roldan and matter of Rodriguez. They relied heavily on those two cases, and those two cases talked about expungement, dismissal, vacating the conviction. It doesn't talk about modification. And there's nothing in Pickering that says that if you have modified your conviction, you're not going to be eligible, that Pickering would apply to you or not. In reality, this court, in the matter of Sandoval versus Ines in 2001, had a similar case to that. In that case, Sandoval was convicted in the state of Illinois for possession of 30 grams all the way to 500 grams of marijuana. He was convicted and he was sentenced for probation. Thereafter, he was placed on deportation, or removal, if you will. He went back to the criminal court and modified its sentence. The case came all the way to this court in 2001, and this court indicated that modified sentence would only be appropriate if the judge had vacated the original conviction and entered a new conviction of possession of 30 grams or less of marijuana. Well, that's what exactly happened in this case. Mr. Ali went back to Dane County in Wisconsin, modified the conviction to possession of 30, or possession of less than...
What is the legal significance of that, given our holding in Gill against Ashcroft, that even total vacator of a conviction doesn't matter unless, of course, the vacator was predicated on legal error in the conviction. There's lots of states have rules that after you finish your conviction, it will be, after you finish your sentence, it will be vacated. And we held in Gill that that's unimportant for federal purposes.
Just by vacating, if you will, vacating under Black Law Dictionary means nullifying, invalidating, dismissing it. We did not do that in this case.
Exactly. That's the basis of my question. Yes. We held in Gill that even totally setting aside the conviction did not affect the consequences for immigration law. That the only thing that would matter, we said in Gill, was a conclusion by the state court that the conviction was legally erroneous. There doesn't appear to have been any such conclusion here. So my question is, if total vacator doesn't matter, why would modification matter? Unless it's based on a legal error.
It was not just this case, the way the opinion is written from Wisconsin, the criminal court did not vacate or modify it based on any criminal error. It is well set that it was set for immigration purposes. I do understand exactly your question. I do understand the point about the Gill case. But at this point, Judge, the only thing we're talking about is the fact that this, I know that it's vacating the case will not help Mr. Ali in this case, but the modification in this case did not get rid of his conviction. There was absolutely nothing said by the court in Wisconsin to say that Mr. Ali is forgiven about his crimes. No, they just modified it maybe to help him out about immigration cases, and that is done. It is written in the judge's opinion, so I cannot go against what the judge has done. But what we are hoping to do in this case, Judge, Mr. Ali, at this point, we have to take a step back and look at the whole case. Possession of 12 grams of marijuana. In Cook County, 12 grams of marijuana, nobody gives the intent to sell, intent to distribute. It was 12 grams of marijuana in Wisconsin, for whatever the state laws were, he pled guilty to that. And then after going back, after being subject to deportation or removal hearings, he goes back and modifies it. And that is exactly what we're hoping to ask this court to look at. It was modified. Nobody had forgiven him of the crime he had done. He had served his time, and now for the past 3 years, because of the possession with intent to sell, he's been in custody. Now, besides the Pickering, the immigration judge looked at the Convention Against Torture and indicated that there is absolutely no problem of Mr. Ali to go back to Afghanistan after being in this country since he was 3 years old, after being a permanent resident of the United States for more than 19 years, to go back to Afghanistan and live, and there will be absolutely nothing wrong with that. Well, for the past 2 years, many people know about the situation in Afghanistan. We had an expert in the lower court. We had an expert who was the project coordinator of Afghan studies in the University of Nebraska.
Counsel, let me tell you what my problem is.
Yes, sir.
Your argument is not specific to Ali. It seems to be saying that as a matter of law, no one may be deported to Afghanistan.
With all due respect, no, Your Honor. That is not my argument. My argument is based on the fact that Mr. Ali will be looked at, and we have mentioned in our briefs, will be looked at as a spy. We have provided 250...
Well, but that's something almost anybody who came to the United States and was here long enough to apply for withholding of deportation could say. It doesn't appear to be based on any reason to think that Ali is at unusual risk. It just seems to be based on the fact that he's been here a long time.
He does not speak the language. He doesn't know the culture. He was three. He was actually two when he moved from Afghanistan. For the past 23 years, he's been in this country.
Let me try the legal side of this.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there any precedent for the authority that the Convention on Torture precludes the removal of somebody who's thoroughly Americanized and therefore would not fit into the culture of his native land?
With all the respect, Judge, the Convention Against Torture doesn't ask the court to
rule on the element. No, I'm asking a question. Is there any authority for that proposition? You may answer no and then tell me that I shouldn't have asked the question, but you can answer my question, I hope.
I believe not. That is your answers your question, Judge, but I believe that is not the standard. Convention Against Torture explicitly indicates that we have to look at the elements that was set by the United Nations, that was ratified by the Senate and is part of the law right now under 8 CFR, Judge. And it is well written that torture, if he is sent back to a place that he would be tortured based by a government official or by somebody who the government knows would torture him, he should not be sent back. Well, Afghanistan is not just Kabul. Even the president of the country has United States Marines bodyguards. Now, this kid, any American who's there, is either a Marine, U.S. Army, or somebody that has ties with the United States government. You're sending a kid back to Afghanistan who has no idea where this place is. There are clans, there are warlords outside of Kabul that may torture this kid. And those are the elements, Your Honor, that you have to look at. Of course, the government says that by not deporting Ali, the law will go under question. Well, Your Honor, I believe that by deporting Mr. Ali, who has been in this country for 23 years, by deporting him, the justice as we know it will go under question. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Command. Mr. Coe.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Larry Cody. I represent the respondent here, John Ashcroft. Mr. Ali is not a citizen of the United States and is therefore removable as an alien convicted of an aggravated felony. In addition, the board did not abuse its discretion when it denied Mr. Ali's motion to reconsider, and that the record supports the determination that Mr. Ali remains statutorily ineligible for any form of relief despite the modification of his conviction, which the record supports and counsel indicates was done purely for immigration purposes. The judge was correct, and the record before this court supports the judge's decision that the Child Citizenship Act does not apply retroactively to aliens who are above the age of 18 years of age as of the effective date of the act, which is February 27, 2001. And this court has decided in Gomez-Diaz that same ruling, and is dispositive of petitioner's citizenship argument, which again indicates that the Child Citizenship Act does not apply to children or individuals greater than the age of 18 as of the effective date of the act. Well, this court does not have jurisdiction to review a removal order. It does have jurisdiction to remove whether or not Mr. Ali was convicted of an aggravated felon. And again, the government submits that the record is clear that he was, in fact, convicted of an aggravated felony. The conviction records from the state of Wisconsin show that he was convicted of possession with intent to distribute THC, which under the Immigration Nationality Act is an aggravated felony. In addition, the Attorney General, in matter of YL, has exercised his broad discretion and determined that this particular type of crime, an unlawful trafficking in controlled substances, is also a particularly serious crime, which both of those taken together do bar petitioner from any sort of relief from removal. With regard to the motion to reconsider, this court obviously reviews that under the abuse of discretion standard. This is a highly differential standard that requires an affirmance of the board's decision if it's supported by reasonable, substantial, and probative evidence, and if the decision is made with a rational explanation based on established policies. The sole basis, as we already established, for the motion to reconsider was this reduction of the conviction to a simple misdemeanor possession of THC. The government's position is that the board properly followed its own precedent in matter of Pickering in determining that the conviction itself was reduced purely for immigration purposes. As the board applied the facts of this case and its own precedent, it properly concluded and did not abuse its discretion when it concluded that the motion to reconsider should be denied.
One of the cases cited in your brief is the Sandoval case, and there's some language in that case that suggests that modification might be treated differently than vacating a conviction. And the court said that even if the state court judge's decision to modify the sentence was motivated by the consequences of federal immigration law, that fact would not render the modification ineffective for immigration purposes. Do you think that's inconsistent with Pickering, or how do you square that language?
No, Your Honor, I think the larger issue here revolves around the Attorney General and the Executive Branch's discretion and function as the those that are have been given the responsibility to administer our immigration law. And what you need to look at in every case is whether or not the court acted purely trying to overcome the Attorney General's discretion in administering the laws of immigration for this country. And that's what we have in this case here. The vacating and the stipulation agreement that was entered into between the state's attorney's office and the petitioner here was strictly for immigration purposes. They're strictly trying to get around and circumvent the Attorney General's discretion in administering immigration law.
Would you concede that this, that the results of this case is particularly draconian?
Your Honor, the results of this case are unfortunate. However, they're by no way unique. If this court looks at other cases where we've decided, or the courts have decided, that the Child Citizenship Act does not apply retroactively. For instance, the Drake's case in the Second Circuit involved an individual who entered the United States in 1963 when they were 6 years old. The mother was naturalized when the child was nine, and she was convicted in 1992 of a crime, and therefore and subsequently deported of that crime. Similar case, a factual pattern exists in the Hughes case in the Ninth Circuit, where an individual was adopted from Poland by two United States citizens at the age of 4 years old, never naturalized, was convicted 25 years later when he was 28 years old, and was subsequently removed from this country. So what we have here is an unfortunate, perhaps, outcome, but it was at the petitioner's own doing. The petitioner failed to become a citizen, failed to naturalize, and the petitioner, more importantly, failed to obey the laws of this country and committed crimes which unfortunately, for petitioner's sake, require his removal from this country. If the court has no further questions, that concludes the government's argument.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you
very much. Mr. Camilli, we used up a lot of your time with questioning. I'll give you 1 minute for rebuttal if you have something. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement.